I'm Phil C.
And I'm Lynn.
And together,
we're Roman Oz.
Real interviews.
With real people.
On location.
With a great mix of Aussie music.
As requested by the people we interview.
Follow us on Facebook.
Or check us out, romanoz.com.au. All interviews are live.
And on location.
And may vary in audio quality from segment to segment.
So, what's on the show?
Well, we're going to start off in Whitecliffs.
Yes, we are.
So, I believe this is probably the
most... This is a must-see.
It is a must-see. It is the most interesting, attractive, brilliantly put together...
Dugout house.
It's a dugout house. I wouldn't call it an attraction.
No.
Because these two people that put this together, they actually live there. This is their home.
And they let you come through.
They do indeed. Now
they do tours, I should say.
Well, they do tours. But actually a tour bus does the tours. They don't really do the tours. They just allow you to go through their fabulous home. So the home is called The Dugout, and it is the home of Lindsay and Cree.
Yes.
So what would you say about Cree?
Oh, she is an amazing woman. She is an interior designer, a decorator, and she has done the house beautifully with her decoration. And some of her artwork, well, I don't want to give too much away, but it is something to see. Let me put in, you know, one little word, roadkill is featured, but not as you would have imagined.
Roadkill is featured, yes, but not as you would imagine, correct. So if she does find some roadkill on the side of the road, she takes it home, throws it in the cook pot, and she doesn't feed it to the tourists.
And it is a separate fry pan that she uses.
And a boiling pot. But what she does basically is she bleaches the skeletal remains.
And makes artwork out of it.
And turns it into artwork. And she also finds things on the rubbish tip.
Yes.
Things on the side of the road.
Barbed wire is another one that is just amazing.
She just virtually finds all these artifacts, I guess you could call them, for one of junk, rubbish.
And creates art.
And creates art.
And it's amazing.
And it is the most amazing place. And Lindsay, wow, what a... He's 70 years of age.
Yes.
And he's an extremely fit guy. This is like the seventh home that they built there in Whitecliffs.
Yeah, I think it was, yes.
So for all our people visiting Whitecliffs, the dugout is definitely a must-see. Now, after that, I'll be talking with Jeff Diath, our regular on the program now, and he's going to be telling us all about weight distribution hitches.
Interesting, yes.
And the difference between what a weight distribution hitch does as opposed to airbags.
Right, okay.
Okay, because they do two entirely different things. So very important to note that airbags are not weight distribution.
No.
All they do is level out your vehicle. And straight after that, we are going to be in St. George.
Yes, which is in southeast Queensland.
Right. And we're going to be visiting the Unique Egg.
Yes, Stavros is his name, and he's an amazing guy. He's Greek, and he moved out to Australia and built a life here, and he whittles away at emu eggs and does magnificent carvings.
Whittle away is probably the best way to term it, because he just doesn't sit there and hack into them, does he?
No, he doesn't.
He says an egg can take up to 50 hours to make a carving. And he did say to me, you have to take it very slow and very carefully, because if you go too far, there's no reverse gear, quote unquote. But he's got the most incredible emu egg carvings, and he's got some of them that are lit up with lamps and lights.
Yep.
And he's had some incredibly interesting people visit the shop as well.
Yes, he has.
Okay. So if you are interested in emu eggs and what you can do with an emu egg.
Or something to do in St. George.
Or something to do in St. George, because the store, the emu egg, it's situated next to Steve Jean's coffee shop in Victoria Street.
That's the main street.
That is the main street. And it's for over 60 years, Steve or Stavros Margaritis, that's his surname. He's been handcrafting the emu eggs in a variety of designs. Now, his inspiration in the craft comes from his early childhood years back in Greece, as you said, because he comes from Greece, where he remembers shepherds in the bush carving from wood. Now, as a kid, he broke a glass bottle which was the very first thing that he used for his carving.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Fascinating.
Fascinating stuff.
But he will tell you stories while you're there in the shop.
Oh, look, he's a character, isn't he?
He is, yes.
He's a character. And he's got some extremely interesting stories to tell. And it is definitely a must-see. It's only $5 to get in.
Yep, just a donation,
yep.
But nothing is for sale.
No, not unless you offer him large amounts of money.
Yeah.
All right, Lynn. So enough said about Stavros and White Cliffs and Checkweight. I think apart from all this fabulous information, we've also got a great selection of music
as requested by the people we interview.
So, Lynn, what do you think? On with the show!
Hello, listeners. Phil C. here.
And I'm Lynn.
And this is Roaming Oz. And we are in White Cliffs.
Yes.
And who are we chatting with, Lynn?
We're chatting with Lindsay and Cree.
Right.
And they have a house that's been dug out.
Tell us all about this dug-out house of yours, Lindsay.
Well, White Cliffs is a very hot place.
Right.
And years ago, the miners, and they said that there was something like 3,000 people here at one stage,
right,
found that the extreme heat of 50 degrees, the best place, the coolest place was underground.
Okay.
That sounds
so correct. Subsequently, they started living underground.
Okay.
And then us modern people have changed it from a cave into like a gallery.
Well, you wouldn't expect, we haven't seen down the house down under yet, the dugout, but to look at where we're sitting, you've got tiled floors,
yep.
You've got glass windows everywhere, you've got this huge tree trunk with a big burl on it. This is a magnificent looking home from here. Your huge book collection behind you. You wouldn't expect that, well, I can't imagine. What does downstairs look like? Is it going to look like this down in the dugout, or is it just going to be dusty and...
It's actually straight in. You don't walk downstairs.
You don't walk downstairs?
It's like walking into a cave.
Walking
down. And I guess it looks like this.
So that clump of dirt that we saw out there, the rocks and everything, you just dug
That's
straight into that. Right.
That
okay.
is the roof. And whose idea was it? Was it yours, Lindsay, to come up with this creation?
Yeah, this Cree's an interior designer.
Right.
And so she's got plenty of good ideas. Mm-hmm. I'm just the little worker. But what we do here is we cut the side of the hill away.
Right.
And then we put this piece out the front. And the reason that we put this piece out the front is for rainwater.
Okay.
Right.
Because that the town water has chemicals in, which is required by law, which we don't like drinking chemicals. So when you build one of these underground houses, the first thing you do is put a roof out and collect the rainwater.
Okay.
Then when we walk into that house there, we're already 20 feet underground.
Wow.
Okay.
And I think when you go through there, which will take you through, you will just be blown away.
Do you have a feeling of claustrophobia with it?
You will answer that.
Oh, right, okay.
You won't feel that at all.
You won't?
But when you're in there, you're so secure,
yep.
and the ground is so hard, it's harder than concrete.
Right.
The old timers, this area was an old mine, another 30 feet under our feet here. But they couldn't dig this level because it was too hard.
Right.
If you take a pick in there, rush at the wall, it will bounce off.
Oh.
That's how hard. It took me a year and a half
really?
Just to dig the rooms of this. And then 5 years ago, we started coming here and furnishing it.
Yep.
And so we've probably got another 2 or 3 years to finish the place.
Wow. Oh, okay.
But this is number six that we've done here.
Number six.
In White Cliffs.
Mm.
So you've sold the other five?
Well, we've still got a couple of them.
Yep.
But the others have been sold. Yes.
Okay.
Wow.
Right. So how long have you been here, Lindsay?
I've been here 55 years.
Okay.
I'm 75 now, and Cree's the same. We're both 75 years of age.
Uh-huh.
But I came from Geelong, and Cree originally came from New Zealand.
Oh.
So what was the attraction in White Cliffs at 20? Did you think, I'm coming out here and I'm going to strike it rich with opal? What brought you to White Cliffs?
I came up here as a wool classer.
Okay.
I walked into White Cliffs one red hot day. It was 50 degrees, and I went into the shop, and I was talking to a lady in there who had an underground art gallery.
Right.
And all her dentures were done in opal.
Oh,
really?
So she was a wonderful character, and invited me to come into the dugout.
Yeah.
And I walked into that dugout, it was 20 degrees, cool, amazing. And I said, how do you get one of these places? She said, just go and put four steel pegs anywhere you like on the side of the hill where you can dig a house. Send $25 a year to the Lands Department and it's yours. So not having much money, I borrowed a pick, a wheelbarrow and a shovel and then built the first house.
Wow.
And what was that, just one room or...?
It was actually quite a big place. It had something like 16 rooms.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Six
to one person.
Yeah.
A B&B, underground.
It was never a B&B, but, you know, just a home.
And, 16 rooms, though. You
can... And the first one I built it as you drove into the hill, and then I put, like, a big centre pillar in front of me.
Yes.
And then made a big... room, a big circular room around that pillar, and then off that circle was all the other rooms. So it was like a big wagon wheel inside the house. Yeah.
So in winter, do you need heating here, or is it just
constant temperature?
Constant temperature.
It drops to about 18 degrees,
and
it stays up around the 20 degrees now in summer.
Right.
So 2 degrees, but. When you're sleeping at night, unlike a house where the temperature drops and you've got to pull another blanket on, you won't have that trouble here, underground.
Really? Okay. So you do tours here daily. The bus tour comes around you have people. How do you feel about having people coming in, you know, every day? Do you feel like you've got to keep the house clean, wash the floors, do the dusting?
Well, we've virtually found ourselves with friends. Uh-huh. Taking them through anyway.
Yep.
So we just made a time that if there was any other people in the town that we would take them through too. So because people were wanting to see what we're doing.
Yep.
And people come to Whitecliff to the Opal and they come to Whitecliff to see an underground home. Because there's only two places virtually in Australia where you can go underground.
Yes.
Here in Kittapeggy. So it's pretty unique.
Mm-hmm.
Mind you, the house, we did do an underground home in Kubipedia, I think.
No, we did a church.
We did a church, didn't we? But nothing like this. I mean, this is magnificent. Oh my God. That's, pretty impressive.
So what's the population of Whitecliffs?
99. You could be the 100 or the 101.
We might have to talk to Lindsay about selling us one of his other homes. So when you came here at 20, did you do mining or no?
Oh, yes, I used to come in every weekend.
Okay.
But when you're digging your home, you find opal too.
Of course.
So, you know, like, you're sort of doing two things.
Two things at once.
There's a thing about opal that when you see it, you're the first person in the world to see that opal.
Yes.
And it can be so beautiful.
Uh-huh.
It's Australia's national gem. Mm.
Yeah.
And it really does. It just gives you a great, okay, you know when you find opal that it's worth money.
Mm.
But that's not the thing. It's the hunt and the excitement of actually finding, and you're the first person to see it.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
It's wonderful. You know.
So you don't feel like you want to just keep going and going and going?
Oh, yeah, you do.
Oh, you do?
You do.
So once you find that one piece, you feel like...
You're hooked. It's like probably fishing or whatever other people do in activities. It's something that gets you.
Yeah.
And then you're like the blokes down the hotel... And they put their hand in, look at it. And it's very exciting.
Oh, okay. So you've obviously made enough out of it to do things and make jewellery.
No, you're not making much money out of it. I mean, to show this place here, how many lights do we turn on, crew?
About 50.
Oh, really?
No, come on, be serious. I think it's 82. And so by the time you pay your electricity bill and your time, you just do it for love, virtually.
82 lights.
So speaking of electricity, do you have any solar energy here?
Have solar and we run the house on rainwater as well.
Okay.
We've got big tanks under the shed and stuff down both sides. So we just cook and do everything with rainwater.
So what is the average rainfall out here?
200 mil a year. Like Sydney get that in 5 minutes lately.
Indeed.
8 inches. 8 inches in the old scale, 200 mil in the...
And that keeps you going?
Yeah, if you collect it,
As long as you've got a big area.
Yeah, when we get up top, when we take you through and we go up the staircase and go up top, you'll see the extent of the roof area that I've got here.
Oh, okay.
And that provides us with our rainwater.
Impressive.
Very indeed. So, the town of Whitecliffs, how did it get its name?
I don't, to be honest, I have no idea, but I would say because of these three hills here and the shedding on the side of the hills of the white sandstone, as you're coming from the west towards Whitecliffs or coming in from the north, in the summer, you can see this white shimmer in the distance.
Yep.
So it just looks like cliffs, possibly like the White Cliffs of Dover if you're on a boat or something. Yep. So I dare say that somebody said, oh, we're going down to the White Cliffs. And I think that would possibly be the reason.
Okay.
Interesting.
Interesting, yes.
Okay.
And do you have any idea how old the town of White Cliffs is? Like, when was it first settled or established?
It's around 1884, somewhere just before the 1900s.
Okay. Mm.
So we're getting well over the whole 100 years there.
So do you know that when it first sort of became established and people realised there was opal here, were there a lot of people here? Because you've got a population now of 91. Do you have any idea, would there have been thousands of people here gouging for opal back then or no?
This is the first commercial opal field in the world.
Right.
And when these kangaroo shooters actually picked these stones up and sent them to Adelaide to a friend and found out it was opal, within about 10 years there was 3,000 people here.
Okay. Mm.
And so you can imagine that water, there's no water in this area.
Mm. No.
So every bullet train, and they tell me that there was 5 camel or bullet trains between Wilcannia, the river, and Whitecliffs, which is 100 k's away, on that road every day. And half their load would have been water or beer or something, with a bit of tin and, you know, some wine and food. But yeah, that kept the population going. And there was a lot of German people come here because that was where we were selling our opal to.
Right.
And they came across. And then when the war started, those people were either sent away or you know, just... So the whole place declined.
Yeah.
Over the years, till the stage now, we've got about 100 people in the town.
Right.
So you capture your own water. What does the town do for water?
We have a huge dam out to the north of here.
Right.
That was organised originally by an engineer that did the Broken Hill water supply, and then went on through here to Sydney Harbour Bridge.
Okay.
And we've touched wood, never run out since.
Never ran out of water.
Yeah. So we've got town water. We've got town electricity, but a lot of people here run on rainwater and solar power.
Solar power.
We have the first solar power station in the world here, which is pretty unique. Used to run the town.
Yeah.
It's now decommissioned, but we're going to get the whole thing going again for tourism.
Yes.
Right. Hmm. So the town of Whitecliffs population is 91. You just mentioned tourism. Do you get a lot of tourists at Whitecliffs?
Look, in the heat, in the summertime, for possibly 4 months, you're lucky to see half a dozen people a week come through here.
Yep.
But from sort of Easter onwards and school holidays, a lot of families bring their children here and they go fossicking out in the field and find some beautiful stuff too.
Okay.
So it's a real family place here because the kids can be kids. It's not like in the city they haven't even got a backyard. Out here, we've got a huge backyard.
Yeah.
And one thing about being out here, unless you're definitely on full Telstra, you've got no phone, no internet, you've got nothing. It's like you're in the third world.
Oh, we just use smoke signals.
Yeah. Smoke signals?
Yeah.
And war drums?
Yeah.
And war drums. All right, look, we're going to have to wind this up, Lindsay Cree. Thank you so much for inviting us into this beautiful home.
Yeah.
We haven't yet seen the underground section. We can't wait to see that. We're just going to wind this up. Now, we're going to play your favourite song. Now, you've left this up to us because you've got so many, you couldn't choose one. So I'm thinking, Lynn, what do you think about Men at Work's Down Under?
Well, I think that sounds quite appropriate, seeing the house is under.
Under, down, under. Thank you so much for your time, Lindsay and Cree.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you. Cree's sitting there. She's a little bit shy, Cree, but that's fine.
We'll be back with more Roaming Oz listeners straight after Men at Work's Land Down Under.
Traveling in a freighter combi on a hippie trailhead full of zombies. I met a strange lady, she made me nervous. She took me in and gave me breakfast. And she said, do you come from a land down under? Where women glow and men plunder. Can't you hear the thunder? You better run, you better take cover.
Welcome back to Roaming Oz. I'm Phil C. If you've just joined us, and we have on the program this afternoon Mr. Jeff DF again from Checkweight. How are you going today, Jeff?
As always, Phil, I'm fighting fit. And yourself?
That's fabulous, mate. As always, I'm absolutely having a ball. Life is fantastic. And since I've had the pleasure of having you as a regular on my program, it's even more incredibly fantastic because I now understand a lot more about the proper way to be distributing weight and so on and so forth. So it's been an absolute learning curve for me as well. And I know my listeners are going to be absolutely thrilled to hear what we're going to talk about today. So what are we going to discuss this week, Jeff?
Okay, probably one of the most controversial posts you'll see on Facebook groups
yes.
is about weight distribution ditches or weight distribution systems.
Okay.
So I thought we'd talk about the old WDH, so weight distribution hitches today.
Okay. So they used to be, back in the old days, the old school days, they used to call them sway bars, didn't they? But they're no longer a sway bar, are they? They're a weight distribution bar, if you like.
Yeah, well, what used to be called a sway bar,
yes,
you know, was a sway bar, but a weight distribution hitch, and
yep.
I'll give you a bit of a hint on what they do. It's okay. In the name. It's a weight distribution hitch.
So,
and look, there is some out there that have anti-sway properties.
Right.
And then there's an American one, which is definitely a weight distribution hitch / anti-sway bar.
Okay.
But the majority of WDHs that people are using are weight distribution hitches and okay. not sway bars.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think where it's confusing is because, you know, it's a secondary, you know, benefit, if you want to think of it that way,
right.
of using a weight distribution hitch is that they may reduce the sway of the caravan.
Okay.
But it's not their purpose.
No.
Okay.
So the purpose is to distribute the weight from the rear axle to the front axle. Is that correct?
Of the vehicle.
Of the vehicle, of course, of the towing vehicle.
Yeah, and we're not talking about the caravan per se.
Yep.
And, you know, at Checkweight, we've weighed, you know, well over 500 caravan and vehicle combinations over the last 2 years.
Right.
And we've weighed a lot of vehicles that are using, you know, weight distribution hitches.
Yep.
But the owners don't really understand what they're doing or why they've got it on.
Okay.
A lot of times it's because, you know, the weight distribution hitch came with the vehicle or the caravan when they purchased it.
Mm-hmm.
Or the salesman said, oh, this is safety, you know, you need to have this.
Right.
But not understanding what they do and how they do it.
Okay. Okay.
And if you haven't got a degree in engineering or physics, it's a little bit hard to understand what they do.
Right.
But essentially, and it's probably not the best way to describe it, but it's one that's used a fair bit, is what they do is they basically apply, if you think of it as applying a torque wrench to the rear axle.
Right.
And moving that weight forward.
Okay.
So by doing that, they're moving weight from the rear axle to the front axle.
Okay.
And and everybody says, well, that must be a good idea. But how do you know that you need it? And most people go, well, you know, if I put weight on the back, buy it through the tow ball, you know, it'll drop 3 centimetres on, you know, the back guard.
Mm-hmm.
And I went, well, yeah, but what's the weight?
Okay.
You know, a dual cab especially is designed to have extra weight in the back.
Okay.
So if you're over your rear axle weight, then by all means you probably need a weight distribution hitch.
If you're over the weight. Only if you're over?
Well, if you're nearing it, probably.
Okay.
I would say that as we've talked about, you know, there's other ways to actually reduce and change that weight.
Yes.
You may be able to change the tow ball weight to a more appropriate tow ball weight if it's a bit heavy.
Mm-hmm.
Or you may be able to move weight from the rear of the vehicle, you know, drawers, batteries, fridges, things like that.
Okay.
So a lot of people go, well, you know, the caravan's swaying, and they'll go into a dealer or they'll go to their friends, or they'll go to Facebook and say, the caravan's swaying, and everybody says, well, put a weight distribution hitch on.
Okay.
Well, weigh the vehicle, weigh the caravan. I mean, these are not cheap items. They're $600-$700 in some cases. And I've weighed vehicles where they're actually not doing anything.
Really?
They're actually distributing no weight.
Oh, wow.
I had a Ford Ranger that I remember where it was distributing 10 kilos from the rear axle to the front. That's all it was doing.
Okay, so, but did it lift it up? Because you know how you sometimes you'll see the vehicle sitting there and you can notice, you sort of step back and you go, oh, wow, look, the back of the vehicle's down because I'm looking at the top of the guard and I can see the distance between the top of the guard and the top of the tyre on the front is totally different to the distance on the back. So does it just lift it up and not actually shift the weight? Like you just said, 10 kilos. Well, that's absolutely nothing, is it really?
Well, that's right. It's actually doing nothing. And if you actually think the weight distribution hitch, the whole device weighs 20 to 30 kilograms.
Mm-hmm.
So when you put that on the back, you're actually putting more weight on the rear axle than you're actually moving.
Wow.
So, you know, in this case, this gentleman was sold it when they bought the caravan. You know, they said to the caravan salesman, and this is probably a bit of a note, don't ask him for everything that's going to make it safe.
Yes.
Because he sold them a weight distribution hitch to make them safe. Well, yeah, the vehicle didn't need it. It wasn't doing anything.
Okay.
So, yeah, they put this extra weight on and had this for them for security.
Yep.
So you know, after weighing it, and I weigh the vehicle and the caravan hitch, so and without the weight distribution hitch and with. So that tells you exactly how much weight it's changing.
Okay.
I've also seen instances where the device or the weight distribution hitch is actually putting too much weight to the front axle.
Okay.
So that therefore they are exceeding their front axle weight.
Okay.
And you know, again, this is one of those things where people have been advised that they should need one. But you know, advice from people who don't know is not very
No. Can actually be very dangerous, and the fact that you are, because I mean I've had a weight distribution hitch on my other caravan. I no longer use it. I put some airbags in my vehicle, and I prefer to use airbags to alter not so much the weight, but just the traveling, the way the vehicle travels. Because now by putting air in there, it makes it very level. It raises up the back of the car. It makes the whole thing very level. And I don't need these weight distribution bars. But, you know, I was also told that they put so much stress on the tow bar and on the ball, and because it's attached to the chassis, that, you know, they've had tow bars crack and things like that by putting so much stress with these distribution hitches.
Well, that's right. And I see a lot of vans that are connected via, you know, they might have a DO35 hitch, for example.
Right.
Or a McHitch or something that's an off-road hitch.
Yes.
So that, you know, part of the appeal of those is that if the caravan rolls, the vehicle won't roll.
Correct.
But then you can put a weight distribution hitch on.
Yes.
So that actually tightens the whole process up.
Yes.
So there's no flexibility. So if the caravan rolls, you roll.
Of course.
And so, but you've got an off-road hitch. So you need to be very careful when you are putting one on, because it's putting that stress where the tow bar attaches to the chassis of the vehicle.
Yep.
Look, and I'm not saying they're a bad thing. I'm not a big fan of them, but yep. Some vehicles and some combinations do benefit from having one.
Okay.
I think the answer to me, though, is most of the time I see them used to fix a symptom, not the problem.
Uh-huh.
So the symptom is, and you referred to it a minute ago, is yep. that the, you know, it's sagging a little bit in the back.
Yes.
Whereas, you know, there's a fix the problem, because if you're over the, you know, your rear axle weight,
yep.
then you probably need to move weight or change the van, or, you know, reduce the weight of the van or the tow ball or some other thing.
Uh-huh.
I weighed a guy today, actually, and the caravan is naturally heavy caravan. At the front, you know, so at tier it was very heavy.
Right.
So then he requested they put a box on and a slide-out kitchen. So he ended up having a 300-kilogram tow ball weight, even though the caravan was only 200.
Oh, wow.
2,000 kilograms. So it should have been around 200, 220.
Uh-huh.
And but there's no way in the wide world, set up the way it is, that he could ever get down to that. So that was impacting the vehicle. So when you looked at the vehicle, it looked like its bum was dragging on the ground.
Yes.
So the first thing people would say is, oh, get a weight distribution hitch, that'll fix it.
Yep.
Well, no, it's mm-hmm. only masking the problem, which is a heavy tow ball.
Okay.
So we went through and gave him advice on the moving things and removing things from the front of the van
mm-hmm.
to be able to reduce that tow ball weight.
Okay.
If I can go back a little bit too, because I did hear you mentioned that you put airbags on.
Yes.
One of the things I'd like to clarify is that airbags and weight distribution hitches do two different, completely different things.
Yes.
So a weight distribution hitch moves weight from the rear axle to the front axle.
Right.
Okay. So an airbag doesn't.
No.
All the airbags do is level the vehicle.
Yes.
So when you're putting the airbags under and pumping up the back,
yep.
be very careful, because you're not actually moving any weight to the front axle.
Okay.
And I get a lot of comments from people is that, it's level, I've put the airbags in, but it's still locking up on the front wheels.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because you don't have enough weight on the front. So airbags, and you'll see that on Facebook again, you know, like, you know, do I put airbags or a weight distribution hitch on? Okay, and it's not an either-or situation.
Okay.
They're not doing the same thing.
No.
They're doing two different things.
Yep, yep, yep. Well, I guess the reason why I went with, because I've got a set of weight distribution bars, and I've not used them since I put the airbags on. But as you know, I had a GVM upgrade, and I had bigger springs and shocks and so on and so forth put in the back. But I just wanted it to be more level, so I didn't really feel that I needed to distribute any weight. But having these blasted great bars on there, you know, I had an old and tired tow bar on my vehicle a couple of caravans back. And by using those weight distribution weights, I actually put a crack in one of the welds because it was old and worn out. You know what I mean? I mean, I don't imagine you'd be able to do that with just any tow bar, but that was an old tow bar, and it was sort of sitting right on its maximums. And when I put the weight distribution on to try and, I guess, sort out the way the vehicle was riding, because by having that weight in the back, sometimes the front goes up, as you know, and you put the weight distribution on to try and shift it around and level it out, actually cracked a tow bar. So I didn't realise it was cracked. It was only that when I took the vehicle in, they had it up on the hoist. They said, look, you've actually got a hairline crack along here. That tow bar is not safe. I thought, wow, okay. So we replaced it with a different bar and, sorted it all out. But, yes.
Yeah, and that's a major problem because, you know, when you think of a normal hitch, you know, when you're going up and, you know, you're going through a road and it's, you know, and in Australia we have beautiful smooth roads. I think there's a couple of K's I've seen smooth roads, but the rest are pretty bloody rough.
Yes.
And so when you're towing a caravan, you know, it's up and down and it's moving and it's changing.
Yes.
So with a hitch, that's flexible.
Yes.
Put a weight distribution hitch on, you get rid of that flexibility.
Yes,
so
absolutely.
So that means where it attaches to the vehicle is a weak point.
Yeah.
So you're putting stress somewhere else. So I thought we might finish off and just talk quickly a couple about myths. In weight distribution hitches, one is that they change the ball weight.
Okay.
So they don't change the ball weight.
Mm-hmm.
What they do is they change the effect of the ball weight.
Okay.
So the ball weight, as we've said before, is adding weight to the vehicle and adding weight to the rear axle.
Yep.
So they're moving weight from the rear axle to the front axle.
Okay.
Okay. So it's a myth that they change the ball weight.
Okay.
You can't just leave them on. You know, you shouldn't have them on when you're going over speed humps and, you know, rough roads, dirt roads, speed humps, or when you're reversing, because you're just adding stress.
Yep.
I mean, ideally, if you need one and you're using it, use them on the highway.
Yep.
Take them off when you're going into a caravan park or a national park or something like that.
Okay. Yep. Okay.
They're not suitable for all cars. There's actually a lot of cars. D-Maxes and MUXs, for an example, up until I think it's 2020 or 2021, they actually recommended against them.
Okay.
And they wouldn't warranty it. So, you know, read the owner's manual and make sure that your car is suitable for them. I think it's also Nissan Navara say they don't advise against them.
Okay.
So if you put it on and something breaks, you know, it may not, be covered by a warranty or either insurance.
Oh, okay. So even the insurance could say, well, you shouldn't have had that thing on there.
Yeah. So, be very careful about, you know, make sure you check your manual and whether they're recommended. And they don't fix the problems of an overloaded or badly loaded caravan. They're designed to fix the levelness of a vehicle and, you know, put more weight on the front axle so you've got better steering and better braking.
Okay.
So if your caravan, and I remember weighing one up in Port Macquarie with the Colorado and towing a van, and it was swaying all over the road, so we went into the dealer and they said, oh, yeah, put the weight distribution hitch on, that'll fix it.
Mm-hmm.
And then it didn't fix it. He knew he had a problem. So he got me in. When I weighed it, the caravan had too much weight on the rear axle and too much weight on one side of the caravan, and the vehicle was perfectly fine.
Okay.
So a weight distribution hitch isn't going to fix a badly loaded caravan.
Okay.
So we fixed the issues with the caravan, and now he doesn't use a weight distribution hitch.
Fabulous. Well, there you go, listeners. We've learned something else today from Mr. DF. It's always a pleasure to have you on the program, my friend. You're educating myself and so many of our listeners. Thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us. What are we going to play for you in relation to the song today?
Well, I thought, you know, because this is a bit of an issue with people if they're not thinking about these things. So I thought we'll go with the model, out of mind, out of sight.
Out of mind, out of sight. Oh, Jeff, you never, ever cease to amaze me with your knowledge and also with your song selections that seem to fit right into the subject we've been discussing.
Google is my friend.
Absolutely. Mate, thank you so much for your time today, and we'll be chatting with you next week. And listeners, stick around. We're going to put on the models now, out of sight, out of mind, and we'll be back with more Roaming Oz straight after that. Caravans have now moved to a brand new location. 11 Clayton Road, Heatherbrae is where you'll find them. Whether you're looking to sell, trade or upgrade, they'll look after you. Check out their range, Silver Valley, Hurricane, Paramount, Road Trip or their flagship Option RV. They won't be beaten on price, so get yourself a knockout deal today. They're open 6 days a week. Why not give them a call on 02-4987-5288 or check out their website, 7thstreetcaravans.com.au. This is Roman Oz, and my name is Phil C, and we are in St. George at the Unique Egg. And I'm chatting with Stavros, the owner of the Unique Egg. How are you today, Stavros?
Well, I'm a little bit dizzy.
A little bit dizzy?
And I put it down to a cloudy dust and a day.
Cloudy day. Cloudy days make you dizzy.
Fair enough. But I had a hell of a night's kangaroo shooting.
Yes.
And always have a sleep at daytime.
Okay.
And every Tom, Dick and Harry wants anything, I could never say no.
Okay.
If I was a Sheila, I would have been always pregnant.
So how long have you been in Australia, Stavros? You're originally born in Greece. How long have you
been here? Since January 1954.
1954.
My uncle had the old Greek cafe here.
Right.
I come here for 2 or 3 years, and I'm still here.
Okay. So, Stavros, tell us a little bit about the eggs. How did you get into carving them, and why? What was the reason for it?
Well, when our village got burned and all this, we used to have sheep, goats, donkeys,
mm-hmm.
and we went bush, live in caves.
Okay.
And we used to, you know, milk and everything.
Yes.
You go on. And shearers and drovers used to do woodwork carving. There's a little walking stick up there.
Yes.
In there.
Yeah.
And us kids, we had no knives to carve. We used to break the bottles and do woodwork carving.
Okay.
Perfect. And when I come here, found my first egg, I break a bottle with the glass and I carve my first egg.
Okay.
And out in the bush when we sit in white and shooting, peg the skins out and all this. The emus having coming around and all this. If you just move slowly, they come from here to there. You give them something to eat, they never leave you.
Okay.
The female bird lays the egg. The male one sits on them between 52 up to 56 days. No food, no water. It can last till the eggs are hatched out. You look after the young ones till they grow up too.
Right.
Nature put 2 to 3 kilos of oil there.
Okay.
Not fat like that.
Not fat in the tummy. So they put the oil in the back, and that's what keeps the bird alive to survive for the time.
That's right.
Okay. So how long does it take to carve an egg?
30 or 40 hours. Up to 50, some of them.
Okay. Depending on the thickness of the egg or what it is you're trying to get from the egg, what makes one egg 50 and another 30?
It is what you carve on.
Okay.
Like everyone, some of them, you go, now, when you carve the egg, you throw away material and you find the colours. If you happen to go a little bit too far, you're not supposed to, no reverse gear, no. You spoil it. And that makes you think.
Now, you said that each egg is unique and each you can get many different colours from the eggs.
Mm.
And is that because of the depth that you have to carve or...?
Yeah, the different depths.
Okay.
Now, when the female bird lays the egg, the male one sits there. Why she goes, she play around with other birds,
yes.
Come back and keep lying. So the eggs are same mother, different fathers.
Ah. So from a different father or different male emu, that will produce a different colour? Or?
Well, older bird lays darker colour eggs, bigger and so, yeah.
Okay. Okay. Now, I understand that your daughter, Panoraya, if I've said that correctly, she now is carving eggs. You've when taught her the art of carving the eggs?
I didn't taught her. She you was didn't? Here blown to just look it and she done it.
Oh, really?
That's it.
So she just, you didn't have to teach her anything? She
was watching what I was doing.
Okay. So when you go to fly with the angels, Panoraya should be taking over and continuing the tradition of the unique eggs.
Yes, and Panoraya, the name Panoraya is my grandmother's name in Greece.
Okay.
And it means above beautiful.
Okay. So what about Hayley? Now, Hayley's just wandering over here. She's showing us the family photographs. Hayley, and what is it that you actually do in the shop?
I'm just customer service. Okay, customer service.
And I give a little spiel about the eggs to the people, yeah.
Okay, so is there anything you can tell us about the eggs as looking at it from a customer's point of view or a person coming in to visit? Because it is actually a gallery, isn't it?
It surely is a gallery,
and
yes.
The eggs aren't really for sale, and it's a $5 entry for the gallery. So I guess you take the people through the gallery?
Yes, so I greet people, give them a little spiel, tell them just to give them a little bit of an idea of what they're looking at, mm-hmm. and then they go through and you can take photos and everything else.
Okay, fabulous. So what can you tell the listeners, what can they expect to see when they come to the Unique Egg?
Well, when you come to see the Unique Egg, you can expect to see a gallery of over 250 carved and illuminated emu eggs.
Okay.
And they're all mostly carved by Stavros. There is, I think it's like 12 out there that are Panareas.
Yes.
So basically my spiel is just telling you, explaining that each one's unique to its own colour, texture and size, as Stavros was just saying before.
Yes.
And then within each shell you can get 8 to 10 layers of natural colours.
Okay.
And then I just show you his first original egg, which is this one here.
Right.
That he did back in 1954.
Okay.
He also did that one with, he broke a glass bottle and used a bit of glass to carve that one.
To carve that one, yeah.
And this one here is what gave him the idea for the light.
For the lights?
He put a candle behind there, saw that the light brought the colour out, and that's when he began illuminating them.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, fabulous. And he's also got a book here, Stavros, A Unique Man, the only self-taught artist of his kind in the world. Now, what can we expect to see if somebody bought that book, for example?
Well, within that book, it's basically his biography.
Okay.
Gives you a little bit of history back in Greece. Shows, when I read it, I knew he was cheeky. But it wasn't until I read the book that I found out how cheeky he was.
How cheeky he is.
Yeah.
He's looking a little cheeky over there, isn't he?
He is. You never know what to expect.
You never know what's going through his mind.
No, definitely not.
Fabulous. All right, well, I'll go back to Stavros now. Stavros, we're going to have to wind this up in a moment, my friend. It's been a pleasure talking with you and learning so much about your fabulous craft. And it's great that you've got Panaraya to continue on with the business of carving eggs. And I want to thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us.
Same to you from us.
Okay, fabulous. All right, now we're back to you, Hayley. I've got to play an Australian song, okay? We always play Australian music after each chat, each interview. Do you have a favourite song we might be able to play for you?
Old Man Emu by
Johnny Williamson.
Yes.
All right, fabulous choice, and I can understand why you selected Hayley. We're at the Unique Egg, listeners. This is Phil C, Raymond Oz, and we'll be back with more of this straight after Johnny Williamson's Old Man Emu.
Keeping 2 feet firmly on the ground. Now I can't fly, but I'm telling you. He can't fly, but I'm telling you. Reckon on the pants of a kangaroo. Yeah. You can't loop the loo like a cockatoo. Swerve and toss like an albatross. silly galarum. Better by far than a white cockatoo or a budgery gar. They squeak and squawk and try and talk. Why, me and them's like teeth and talk. But I don't know. I'm live and I'm telling you, we can run the band till I can go ring the little 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 little. Well, a dingo came around one day, hey there, emu, wanna play? But the emu was too smart for him. Walked right up and kicked him in the shin. But I'm telling you, we can run the pants of a kangaroo. Well, the last time I saw old man, he knew him, but a little da-da-da. He was chasing a female, he knew him, but a little da-da-da. As he shot past, I heard him say, she can't fly, but I'm telling you. But I'm telling you, she could run the fair till I can go. Well, there is a moral to this ditty, but a little da da da. Thrush can sing, but he ain't pretty, but a little da da da. Duck can swim, but he can't sing, nor can eagle on the wing. If you can't fly, but I'm telling you, he can run the fair till I can go. Well, I pulled the barrel up and he said, it's true, but a little da da da.
Ah, there you go, listeners. That is Johnny Williamson with his classic Old Man Emu. I'm going to just play you one more track before we wind up this afternoon's episode of Roman Oz, okay? And this is another Johnny Williamson classic. It's a song called, and it gets requested heaps, Old Farts in Caravan Parks.
Oh, happy travellers are we, around Australia in a caravan. The kids are gone, we have no plan. You navigate, I'm your engine man. Yes, happy campers are we. And king of the road are we. Up a mountain road we wind, with a mile of traffic stuck behind. Too friendly a folk you wouldn't find. Oh, cheery old chooks away. We've hit the road and sold a home. Like a pair of drovers round we roam. No more winter and no more foam. We're wild and fancy free. And a pair of toilers are we. We'll pick fruit or prune a tree. Any old job doesn't worry me. It'll cover our fuel and the camping fee. Ah, frugal old farts, oi. And a dear old chook of you, in your terry-toweling dressing gown. The one you bought in a country town. Yours is pink and mine is brown. Threadbare old farts, oi. Yes, we've hit the road and sold a home. Like a pair of drovers round we roam. No more winter and no more foam. We're wild and fancy free. Oh, geez, we'll have to pull up again soon, darling. And a tidy little unit are we. Everything has a place to be. A jar of coffee and a tin of tea. A life or two, but not for three. Oh, sexy old tarts away. And we always camp just near the loo, cause I have to go at midnight too. And dribble, 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 dribble's all I do. Oh, over the hill are we. Oh, happy campers are we. Around Australia in a caravan. The kids are gone, we have no plan. You navigate, I'm your engine man.
Yes, happy campers are we. Go around. And the same to you too, Sonny.
We hope you enjoyed the show, listeners.
If you missed any, check out our Facebook page, Spotify, or RomanOz.com.au.
Tune in next week for more
Roman Oz.